Big.
Shiny.
Goons.
Touch them all, Joe.
Yeah! You beauty!
It's only game.
Hello and welcome to the very first episode of Big Shiny Goons. My name is Thomas Williams. I'm here with Arun Srinivasan. Arun, how's it going, man?
It's going good, man. Thank you for having me on.
No problem. You're the guinea pig for this temporary, I don't know why I said temporary, but like you're the guinea pig for all this new project that I'm going on. But yeah, thanks for testing it out.
Yeah, man. Honored to be here. Man, me as the first guest. It's crazy, bro.
anyways, Arun. If people don't know Arun, obviously writer for Yahoo and editor for Yahoo, but if you could just introduce yourself for a little bit for the guests.
Okay. Hey, my name is Arun Srinivasan. I am an editor and writer at Yahoo Sports Canada. I primarily cover hockey, but I cover pretty much all sports except for golf. Aside from that, I'm working on a book about the history of racism in hockey in Canada. Otherwise, about me, I like hip hop quite a bit. I like watching movies. I have interest in leftist politics. And then, you know, in the before times, I liked going to bars and drinking too much.
Speaking of before times, how are you doing during this kind of new wave of the pandemic, kind of the quasi ending? I don't know. I'm not even sure if I should call that yet.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of sucks. I can't lie. Can't front, mental health's been bad, but there's a commonality, like everyone's kind of going through it, right? There's no,
right.
Things are going to get better. I think the living alone part is just at the worst of it. I'm a pretty social guy by nature. I like talking to people. So that part's the toughest. I've stopped looking at like COVID statistics at this point because it just like bumps
me.
Oh,
man. So yeah. At that point, you just have to like stop and just like, okay, I'm going to see the headline when I see it that like things are eventually getting better. But right now I'm just like, I don't want to like cut down number of a number or anything, you know?
Exactly, man. That's just it. So really just like finding ways to like not go crazy inside, I think, but in some ways it sort of teaches you like self-reliance, right? I mean, everyone's kind of going through their own struggles. You can pick up your friends the best that you can. But other than that, man, I mean, just watching sports, reading about sports, working on this book. And just like, I've got like a letterboxed during the...
Oh, yeah.
Just like not that I think I'm like Roger Ebert or anything, but honestly, it's been the best way to like track time, like because I'm like everyone's sense of time is so warped. But like for me, like looking back, it's like, oh, I watched this movie 4 months ago. Cool, like so it's been helpful in that regard.
Yeah, I haven't been getting into that at all. I'm not like a huge movie guy, I would say, but I was like, I'm definitely cautious of like reading review before any making that decision, making that time commitment. Mm-hmm. So I do like, so is Letterboxd, what I gathered from it was like just seeing people link to it on Twitter or whatever. It's basically Substack for movies or?
Yeah, sort of. Like that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, I guess. Like, some people go out of their way and like write like these like huge reviews. And I'm just like, oh, sup, I watched this movie this day, 1 to 5 stars. Great. Maybe I'll write a review if I feel inspired. It's usually just like, yo, instant classic, bro. Like, just like... But I don't know. I guess I've learned a little bit. Some people you take their viewership seriously, and I've learned a lot, read a lot. It's just been just a little like hobby, right? Because if you're in sports, right, your whole life is sports, and not to complain about like a dream job or whatever, but like you need time to unwind. Like there's only so much you can watch, read, and consume, right? Without it, and especially without being able to like go outside and like. Go to the movies or whatever. Like it's just so it's good to just sort of build other interests outside of sports, even though we are sort of maniacally obsessed with sports.
Man, like that's not to go too like inside baseball or meta with here, but it's like that's kind of why I started this. Was like I've had this kind of idea to do something mixing in like my two kind of interests in sports and music, and they're like kind of driven throughout my whole life. So like it's just trying to something just new, something like that's different in a sense, but like still comfortable and still relatable, I guess. Cause like no one that likes sports isn't like really will be like, oh, I hate music or anything, or like, and kind of a little bit of vice versa, but like, it's just like, it's just something just to get like out of from, like, you can only do so much of one thing so much. So it's just like, it's just that extra step to get that juice flowing, you know?
Totally, man. Totally get it. No, things like this are good, man.
Yeah. Anyways, so speaking of relatable or getting interest elsewhere, we're going to move on to the first segment of the show, of the premiere debut show of Big Shiny Goons. So this is The Goods. Also, yeah, I'm not sure if I'm going to stick with that name, but it's right now, that's what it is. So Rune, so this is the segment of the show where we get the guests to give us what you're listening to lately, anything that's up and coming, anything new, or anything that's old that you're just checking out again, just something that you've just been listening to lately, anything at all.
Ah, man, that's a good question. I was listening to The Dedication 2 by Lil Wayne a lot last month, parts of this month, some Lil Baby. Last night I was just like, just the Boogie Nights soundtrack. It's a good soundtrack, man. It's got a lot of good tunes. Those are probably the big three I've listened to the last couple of days.
Yeah. Just been rotating all three?
Sort of, man. I mean, like, yeah, like, you know, I would say this, like, it's probably not the best, and maybe it's not the best thing to say on this pod, but this is the year where I finally just feel so behind on, like, new music. You know what I mean? There's so much that's out there all the time. So, like, I'm still listening to, like, Gunna from, like, 2018 and thinking it's the same year. I'm like, oh, wait, this came out 3 years ago. So,
it's just, like, one of those things where you're so interested in, like, whatever, and you kind of stick to the things that you know. And, like, that's what just makes you comfortable and makes you feel good. So, it's, like, anything that's new, you'll have to, like, get right on it or it just falls behind, you know?
Completely.
Yeah. Were you a big Lil Wayne fan for, like, throughout his career?
Yeah, I like Wayne quite a bit. You know, I'm not going to, like, lie and say, like, oh, you know, like, when he was with Hot Boys and Juvenile, like, I was on him from the start. Or even, like, when, like, the Carter 1 and, like, even when Carter 2 came out, I was just, like, it took me a while. But I think, like, in between Carter 2 and Carter 3, I was just like, oh, my God, this guy really is the best rapper alive. And, like, his mixtape era, too, just, like, unbelievable run. From 2005 to 2009, there's no artist as prodigious as Lil Wayne. Like, the volume and quality and just, like, some people say that Lil Wayne's not a lyricist. I'm just like, you're out of your mind. He's, like, the things he comes up with are just, when he's on, he's insane. You know, it's too bad that the quality of his work and his political leanings have completely fallen off in the last little bit. But,
yeah,
you know, when Wayne's on, there's no one better.
Yeah, it's that, like, awkward just, like, taking the art away from the artist, you know, like, separating that whole thing. And it's unfortunate that we kind of have to do that. But for me, I feel like Lil Wayne, and I guess we'll talk about it more when we kind of, if you've seen the title of the episode, you know what we're talking about later. But, yeah, like, if, for me, it was kind of separation of, like, evolution that I was so interested myself into 50 Cent, and like it eventually, and then I just missed Lil Wayne just right after, kind of like, yeah, I kind of diverted away and then never really got back into hip-hop and everything, or like until way later on. So I kind of just missed that whole curve and that whole career arc of Wayne. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of like an understated era at first, right? Because like Wayne in many ways is like a prodigy. He's like the Sergio Ramos of rap. He's been in the game forever. You know, like he made Madrid's first investment team.
The different styles too.
Completely different styles, yes. Yeah. But the point being is like he's been around forever, you know. And then like, you know, he's just like rapping at like just an unbelievable level at 23 years old too, 24 years old. You know, and like that's even before he sort of blew up in the mainstream, because like when Carter 3 came out, that's when I felt like he got mainstream appreciation. You know,
right.
So then if you just circle back, you can just find all that, the wealth of music. But like, yeah, like when A Millie dropped and Carter 3 came out, that's when you just like, just hit a stratospheric level of like commercial
success. Oh my God. Yeah. I remember like if my parents heard it, then or for sure. Like if I heard old, like middle-aged white people going like A Millie, like, man.
That was, Yeah, that was like my first year undergrad, and it was like the hottest song every club. Like, just insanity.
Oh man, what a time. Anyways, man, that's yeah. So that's good that you're checking out later. So yeah. So moving on to the next segment, we're moving through this quickly because there's a huge chunk that we have to get to, a huge depth of history and knowledge that we have to get to.
Okay.
This is the big one. And again, I don't know if I'm going to keep that name, but it's just something that I just kept and just decided and wrote at one time that I'm just going to have. Anyways, so obviously, Arun, can you tell the audience what you have chosen as your specific album that you want to highlight?
The specific album I want to highlight is 50 Cent's classic, Get Rich or Die Trying. Should I explain further? Or?
Go for it, yeah.
Get Rich
or Die Trying. Again, this is all like experimentation, just like whatever.
So when Thomas asked me to come on a few days ago, he asked me to pick an album that had a lot of meaning to me. And frankly, like, I'm not someone who takes music seriously, TM. Like, I'm not one of those people who are like, oh, this album speaks to me sonically, whatever. However, this album has lots of, like, sentimental meaning and historical meaning to me, too. Not only that, it still slaps in 2021. Like, it's still a timeless classic. So, yeah, Get Rich or Die Trying. Get Rich or Die Trying is probably the first album that allowed me to form, like, real thoughts about music, if that makes any sense. Like, obviously, I've been listening to, like, you know, being developed some opinions about popular music before then. And I wouldn't say 50 Cent, like, he's not the first rapper ever, like, that really resonated with me. Like, it would be, like, Ludacris or Eminem, probably. But Get Rich or Die Trying, so it drops in February 2003, so I was in eighth grade at the time. And while there were other albums that came by and passed and celebrated, it felt like this album was, like, resonant for, like, two whole years. Like, the first single he dropped from this album was In the Club, which dropped in January 7, 2003. And then the fifth single from was If I Can't in September 2003. Like five singles. And yet, like, it just felt like he dominated the year 2003 and his impact just, like, spanned so much further than that. So, like, the first time I heard of 50 Cent was a few months before Get Rich or Die Trying came out. My neighbor Max, this Polish kid who was, like, obsessed with basketball and hip-hop, showed up and he was like, you gotta listen to this. And it was Wangsta. And yet, like, you hear the lyrics and, like, at that time, like, you're still, like, a kid, but you're also, like, trying to be cool. And, like, the lyrics of Wangsta made you realize, like, it probably influenced some, like, stupid behavior looking back on it. Just, like, oh, I want to be a gangsta, yet you're, like, a suburban kid. Oh, man, I guess I really do have to start, like, stealing and, like, and all the shit that 50 talked about. But then when Get Rich or Die Trying came out, it just, like, it had an effect, like, on, like, at least culture. And I say this as if, like, you know, I don't know, like, I mean, I grew up in the suburbs of Mississauga. Like, it's just, like, grew up in Mississauga. Like, it's not, like, you know, I can speak initially from, like, an authentic perspective of how it influenced urban life. But, like, even in the suburbs, like, everyone was playing it. Like, everyone was playing it. You couldn't go anywhere without hearing part of that album. And then, like, one of my friends, like, too, she, like, lamented the fact that, like, Gen Z kids will never know music videos. Like, the In the Club music video was amazing.
Oh my God.
And, yeah. You know, I think 50 figured it out, like, really well, like, you know, with the help of Dr. Dre, with the help of Eminem, they just figured it out how to, like, market, like, this album perfectly, too. Like, In the Club was so popular as a single when it came out that it almost, like, overshadowed the rest of the album. Like, what I mean by that, and the reason why I sort of brought up, like, the single release dates, where it's like, PIMP came out and was released as a single in August, but then the album had been out forever. But, like, that song's popularity skyrocketed as it was released as a single. And, like, you know what? You could have had, like, nine singles on this album of a 16.
Yeah.
It's insane. Like, I've never heard or felt or seen an album like this. And, yeah, no album's, like, dominated, like, a single year and then, like, had influence over two or three subsequent years like this ever in my lifetime.
Yeah, I feel like 50 was, like, the one to really push hip-hop into, like, commercialization. Not to go for, like, so, like, the music business and everything. But, like, I feel like this album and kind of the ties with Dre and kind of everything that went before it a little bit. And this kind of, like, it got in its way of, like, more into the mainstream, more into popular music, and hip hop becoming a segment of popular music. I feel like, I think with that and it debuting at number one and being 9 times platinum and all that stuff and all those like statistics you could run off, I just feel like Get Rich or Die Tryin' is like, honestly, probably the first moment of everyone kind of that wasn't aware before is like now aware of this whole like culture and this whole genre and everything.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm sure there are like music historians or really hip hop heads who are older than us would probably disagree with that.
Right.
But yeah, as it relates to like people of our general like age group generation, I would agree with that. Like, you know, a lot of people probably credit, you know, Jay-Z or Nas or Pac and Big like before that, and then that's all well and good. But in terms of like influencing like me, yeah, like Eminem was there obviously, but it's different, right? I don't know, like Eminem tried so hard to build into his like that, hey, like look at me, I am subversive, like he was pretty much screaming
right
at us. And yet in comes 50, he was like this genuine powerhouse with like, you know, the backing of Eminem and Dr. Dre. I mean, granted, like that, I'm sure that helped from a commercial perspective, but you know, 50 Cent didn't need anyone to like lend him any like necessarily credibility. Like this guy came out rapping his ass off. Like you did not want, like he put out this like game, was like, you do not want to fuck with this guy. And it's true. Like he was like, you know, like in many ways, it was like a, you know, a gangster rap album from a guy you just look at and like, oh, this motherfucker is a gangster. Yeah, for a gangster rap album, like Get Rich or Die Tryin' is like very singable. You know, there's like, I was like listening to today and like singing along. Like it's a great album, and like for so many different reasons. Because like at any given point in time, like from like 2003 to maybe the middle of 2004, like 8 different songs were the most popular song on the album. Like In the Club was like when it first dropped was like clearly the most popular song on the album. But then like was Many Men, then the summer PIMP comes out, the PIMP video comes out, and it's like, oh my god, this is a song of the summer, arguably. You know, 21 Questions, like some people argue like that might have the most staying power, you know. But like I don't know, right? Like that's the beauty of this album. Like what is the best song on the album? Or what is the most what is the most resonant song like 18 years later? You know,
right.
I honestly don't know. And that answer would probably change several times.
Yeah, and it's all like kind of in retrospect of what's popular now too. Like you hear like the really like almost cheesy now and corny now, like early 2000s synths on a lot of the beats that Dre produced. And like you hear that like some songs, and even like In the Club with its beat or with its like guitar part, it's just like it's very stuck in its little time capsule, but it's such like a complete song that's just carried its way through popularity. But like I feel like 21 Questions might like even be the opposite of that. I think from now and from this perspective of now, that is like a song that has, and like you said, the staying power. I think it's just done exactly that, just kind of stuck around because it's so like timeless, almost like it's just so singable, like you said, and so like just instantly when you play. Like I remember, so I had this jazz trio that would play hip hop beats at like a random downtown Toronto restaurant every Saturday when I was when I was doing my undergrad, and like we did 21 Questions a couple weeks in a row, and like the whole place of course just sang along, like create, like it was insane of just like everyone knew exactly every lyric, everyone knew exactly what the, like as soon as the guitar player played that lick, the do 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 do, like the is exactly, everyone knew it. It was so like, I think that just had like, it proved to me that had the most staying power off that album. But I think there's so many like you can't really miss with everything.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree. You know, 21 Questions probably is the one that has the most staying power. I would say Many Men might be like the co-favorite.
Yeah.
Man, this is technically like a half sports podcast after all, right? So there was that, I don't know if you saw it, I'm sure you did. There was that meme of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer with the mini men.
Oh yeah.
The mini instrumental play behind him. You know, anytime right when is Ollie still at the wheel, and then now we get like a big win, and the mini men video would just pop on the timeline. It's great. And when Trump got COVID, people were blasting Mini Men, there's still like phrases in like that are in like lyrics from this album that still like resonate in pop culture today, which is just a crazy thing, like from an album that came out in February 2003. Just incredible.
Do you think a lot of that is like nostalgia, or like actually still good and still current, or is it just like kind of steeped in this nostalgia of past success?
No, I mean, I think part of it is nostalgia, obviously. I think with any album that ages this well, I mean, and you know, you look back on it, inevitably is nostalgia, even though it's reflecting on it, counts as nostalgia. But I honestly do think like there's like real influence there, you know, for a gangster rapper to make a popular, singable, like catchy song in the club, you know, it's a tough thing to do, right? You know, a lot of gangster rappers were like, well, I don't want to put out the song that sort of has like the singy, like, you know, chorus and hook, right? And like lose anything from it, or like lose their image from it. And then, you know, like I felt like, even as like, I mean, this take could be wrong, I'm sure, but at least the way I felt, it felt like every other development subsequently was like, at least for a little while, was like in response to 50 Cent. Like, you know what I mean? Like the whole 50 Kanye thing. That was sort of like, well, you know, Kanye drops College Dropout a year later, and while he was going to do his own thing anyway, it was almost like, it was marketed at least as like, well, look at this guy. He's like the diametric opposite of 50 Cent. Like, this motherfucker wears polo shirts, you know, and it's like, you know, I guess like present himself almost as, you know, the anti 50 Cent in some ways. Which is obviously like, you know, an oversimplification of both Kanye and 50 Cent, but it did feel like that's the way some people were presenting it. It's like, well, you know, 50 so violent and gangster, you know, Kanye is proving that, you know, mainstream hip hop can have a conscience. Like, some real, like, real writers, people were writing that for real. Like, these were real things written by music publications at the time. And it's just like, man, I mean, it's funny to look back on now, but at the time, it was just like almost everything was like in correlation with 50 Cent, at least in hip hop, you know?
Right.
For a little while, and that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of his, like, especially with this album, it kind of helped him become, like, after I was kind of reviewing it and kind of seeing it, I was like, it almost made him approachable in a sense, if that's the right word. Like, he comes off this like reputation and kind of before, and like with everything, and it being his debut record. And then after all the insane success, he's kind of become more like approachable from more of a mainstream thing. And that might've been what I was more talking about with like commercial success before. And obviously, like, I recognize Pac and Biggie as like the kind of stars of the 90s that kind of essentially brought that, and even like Run DMC before that. But like, I think this took it to like almost a different era of commercialization, very like 21st century, you could say. I don't know. I think that's what I was talking about, more of like just kind of being approachable and kind of like this image that he's kind of made for himself, especially with that album.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good way of approaching it, right? Because like, you know, some people would probably argue that like Nelly might have served as like sort of a bridge, but like Nelly really couldn't get past like Country Grammar, right? Like, it was
right.
Just like, well, he dropped Country Grammar, which was an awesome album, and it's did it go, what, single platinum, double platinum? Anyway, but but there was just like, I don't know, like that whole album wasn't very good. I mean, the singles were good, but you know, there wasn't this guy who had the staying power. One other thing too, like people these days, you know, often will be like, oh, this, like this lyrics, this album's got no skips. You know, that's like a common thing. And I don't know. I tend to think a lot of people are lying a lot of the time when they say this album has like no skips, because like people, for one, like attention spans are so shot these days, you know, viewing habits are so shot these days.
Right.
You know, like, there's so much, you know, not sound like some sort of brand bot, but there's so much content these days in any form. And yet, like, Get Rich or Die Trying, I did not skip a single song. Even the clear worst song of the album to me, which is, what's it called? Which is Bloodhound featuring Young Buck. Still, like, a pretty good song.
Right.
Yeah. You know? But, like, yeah, there's this whole idea of, like, these days with, like, and then people sometimes will get mad at their favorite artists putting like 25 songs on an album, or I don't know. It's a 53 minute album, 16 songs. You know, if you count the bonus tracks, then it's a 19 song album with, you know, that's 69 minutes. Nice. I don't know. Like, it's even albums that, like, that I love, like Carter III, for example, one album we talked about. There's a skip or two on there. For sure, you know, or like anything that like Future, like anything Future's done, you know, there's, I mean, especially nowadays, there are definitely a few skips problem, you know, but this is the one where it's like, no, there's not a single song would I skip. And like, I don't know, like, this may sound like a bizarre or an odd thing to say, but I don't think people are necessarily going to consume albums like chronologically anymore, like start to finish anymore, you know?
Yeah.
But with this, yeah, it's like you can just go all the way through and it'll be fine and it makes sense. And you could probably speak to this a lot more, but like the way it's just like produced, like all the tracks make sense sequentially. It's really great that way.
Yeah. Like I was even just thinking, like with all the intro and with everything kind of, it's so produced and like, what's the word? Like, not manicured, but like, whatever, I'm gonna forget it, but yeah, so like perfectly just in place of just like kind of flowing through and everything, and then 21 Questions shows up, and then like, so that's later on, and then more of like the dark horse kind of not single out like single songs or anything, but more of like the reasonable tracks and everything that comes down later. But I think it's honestly just like a well curated album, honestly, like, and I don't think you see that a lot anymore, and I'm sure like people do still put thought into it, but it's more of like, okay, what are people wanting now? So like people listen to chunks of albums, so it's like you might like track 7, 8, 9 and then you just keep on playing those again or something, like if you go to an album, or you just like a couple songs and you'll just have those and put on a playlist or whatever. But I feel like with Get Rich or Die Trying, it was very like intentional in its track list, I feel.
Absolutely, man. Like, couldn't have said it better. Like, that whole idea of putting 7, 8, 9 together, or like a few like hits and putting that on your playlist, that's exactly it. I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily how everyone consumes it, but that's certainly how I do.
Right.
But yeah, we've talked about this a little bit, like, you know, how like almost like, you know, you can pick a new favorite in every song. Like, one of the objective worst songs on this album is called Like My Style, featuring Tony Ayo. And yet, that was like my hockey pregame song for 2 years.
I'm gonna have to put that on the podcast now. I'm gonna play that song. That'll be the first feature song.
Great. I mean, yeah, Like My Style, like I would play that before, yeah, like games, like, or on the way to the arena. Like, I don't know why, like, you know, because there probably were better songs, and in retrospect I probably would have, you know, Many Men might have been a better choice to get hyped for a game. But yeah, like, but it's probably the 12th or 13th best song on the album, and yet it still had like a lot of meaning for me, or a lot of utility for me at least. Crazy.
Yeah, I think it's just honestly evolved into this like timeless classic that now I just seem super like old headish of like liking this record. I don't know if you feel the same way, where you're like, feel like you should be like listening to something else, and you're like, no, I'll just put this on. It's still good.
Yeah. Although, like, you know, it's funny that you bring up the old headish, because around that time, right, around the time of music, and for a number of years afterwards, there's this whole idea. It's like, well, like, I always found it super annoying because people would be like, oh, who are your top five rappers? And if you don't mention invariably Biggie, Pac, or Nas as one of them, people would be like, oh, you don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Where that was more a reflection of like your age more likely, or, you know, or in some places like which region you grew up on. Like, you know, I mean, granted, like, you know, it wasn't like I wasn't listening to Tupac because I'm on the East Coast or anything, nothing like that. But I think specific to us, like there was a time, like, you know, and especially around the time this album dropped, you know, it was just like, oh, if you don't have like, you know, if you're not listening to like Tupac or, you know, Nas, or, you know, or some people would be like, oh, if you're not listening to like Immortal Technique or whatever, like, you know, you're not really about hip hop. And yet in comes 50 Cent with this like authoritative, powerful like album that's like, bro, like, have you heard this? Like, this guy is amazing. So yeah, I don't know. Like, I think for me, I think it was really good that this album came out because it sort of reshaped that conversation. It was like, oh, wait a minute. Like, your favorite rapper can be like 50 and like some of these newer guys. And then that, and then like, then came Kanye, you know, Dipset was out, you know, a few years later, Wayne started his like attack on, you know, his insane mixtape run. So it sort of demarcates the point where it's like, you know, you can sort of having these rappers who feel like closer to, you know, they're not your contemporaries, but like, they're not like your older brothers, like favorite rappers, you know, and you can sort
right.
of, you can sort of build your own list. Like nowadays, if someone asked me who my favorite five rappers of all time, it'd be like Wayne, Future, Missy Elliott, Kanye, and then like, I guess Cameron, I guess. You know, and then yet, like, you know, there's no Nas, no Jay-Z, there's no Big, there's no Pop. Like, you know, they're all good in a way, but that's not reflective of like the music, like the era of hip hop I listen to, you know. And right. I'm in my early 30s now, but like, there was a time where it's like, oh, you like, what? Like, Nas is not one of your favorite rappers? Like, whoa, well then you don't like rap. And it's like, what? It was just a reductive conversation, and I'm glad like 50 Cent sort of like breathe a new life into it.
Right. Yeah, it's like almost the, like, there's a reason why it's your top five or whatever, not like, you don't have to say you're like, this is everyone's top five, this should be everyone's top five, but this is like almost just my opinion, like my feeling, what I've been exposed to, what I've kind of just been connected to. It's just, it's mine. It's like what I like about the, I like specific things, and like, that's, and I like these rappers for those things. Like,
yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, we both work in sports where there often is like a correct answer to things. Like, granted, there's a lot of,
right,
there's some subjectivity, but we can either explain it with like analytics or like just reading or like, or just even basic stats, like, you know,
yeah,
like your whole thing today about like the Jack Eichel thing. It's like, well, it's just like, it's, but you're right. It's like, who in their, yeah, who's not going to trade their best prospect for Jack Eichel? Like, that's the objectively correct thing to do. And yet with music, there's no such thing necessarily, you know? I mean, yeah, you can say like an album is like pretty terrible, I guess, but like, you know, you could listen to your favorite five albums, I could listen to my favorite five albums, and none of us would be initially right. Whereas the people who wouldn't trade for Jack Eichel are objectively out of their minds, just craziness.
Yeah, it's almost like, I think sports needs to like take a little bit from music or like from art, that it could be very subjective. Like, man, I remember there was going every single Twitter debate of who's a better player between this player, this player, this guy's more defensive leaning, this guy has better numbers, this number, whatever. It's just like, can we just like agree that they're both good? Like, and that you like a more defensive player and you like watching that player more, so then you like it more, and this guy scores insane highlight goals, but not a lot of them. But like, it's just, I feel like sports just generally needs to take just a little bit of note from like any critic or anything. That's just like, it doesn't need to be perfect. You don't have to like prove your statement that is correct. Like, you could just say, I like this about this thing, and then put it at that. Like,
yeah, no, you're right. That's exactly it. I mean, you know, like in basketball, right, the Jordan LeBron debate, you can't go like a single day without it being on the internet. And it's just like, man, like, this is so boring, guy. Like, they're both, like, incredible. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. But I never thought of it that way until you just said out loud that, you know, sports could borrow a little bit more from music and art. Yeah, that's true.
Well, like, I found that out when I started, like, getting to skateboarding and stuff and, like, watching skateboarding videos. It's like, okay, this is athletic, but it's also, like, artistic. So it's like you're seeing athletes and you're like, some tricks are more difficult, so pulling them off is true. But sometimes you like a trick more because it's like simple and just looks nice. So it's like that balance of like everything, kind of the middle point of sports and art. So it's like, I don't know, it's kind of crazy to think about, and you can go on and on about it. But I think that is good for your album of all time or most memorable album. I still don't know what segment I'll call it. Anyways, let's move on to the next segment.
Cool.
So this one will be called The Content. And again, I don't know if the title will stay. It might be changed something else. It's there for now. This is where I will have you, Arun, tell me just what any recommendation for the audience, for me, for just to check out. It doesn't have to be an album, song, or anything. It could be a book, article that you've read, a cool video, a random YouTube video, anything that you just checked out recently and kind of just recommend to check out for people.
If that's clear. I've got like all these books on my desk. I don't know. It's a good question. I should have been more prepared for it. These
books are pretty trying. It's the first episode. You don't have to be prepared. I'm not very prepared.
Okay, so I mean, I watched the movie The Master last night for the first time,
and it was okay. Amazing.
So that was great. So I would recommend that. If what else? If Beale Street Could Talk is on Netflix, that was really good. It's by Barry Jenkins, the director of Moonlight. Okay. Would recommend that. For movies. My friend Dan Reynolds has this comic called Genghis Khan. I guess the audience clearly cannot see it, but I'm holding it up anyway. Pretty cool comic book. I guess those would be my recommendations. Articles, dude, there's so much to read all the time.
There's so much content. We're just throwing it out at the audience right now. Just check everything out.
Those are a few movies and a comic book to recommend for now.
It's perfect. How do you like kind of get to like come across stuff? Is it mainly through social media? You kind of discover stuff to check out or use your time?
Yeah, a little bit. With movies, it's honestly just like what's on streaming platforms, and like sometimes I've always wanted to watch and it just pops on. I used to be like a little bit of like, when I was in my early 20s, I'd be like, this is Academy nominated, I'll watch it. Now I'm just like, you know, certain actors and director, I like, I'll watch it over, it's accessible.
Right.
Comic book was just my buddy Dan Reynolds again on Twitter. It's his book, so I ordered it. But with the sports content, it's like completely different. I mean, this is like my life. To be, you know, good at my job, I have to read about several sports all the time, watch games pretty often, tape games, read some more. Read good stuff, read bad stuff. Like really, like that's it. I mean, to be a good like multi-sport editor, you have to be reading nonstop. There's tons of articles. I guess the best sports article I read was one was by Carl Anka of The Athletic. He wrote something on Kylian Mbappe this week. That was really good. And then I don't know if it's essentially corny or not to like plug people like I work with, but this person named Yasmin wrote this great article on Draymond Green this week for Yahoo Sports Canada. I thought that was a really good read. The pieces you wrote for us were great too, bro.
Like, don't say that.
No, 100%. Honestly, your work like often makes me smarter as a hockey writer, so I always appreciate that.
You gassed me up on my own podcast.
Fair, but I wouldn't be like, I also wouldn't, you know me though, I have high standards. I wouldn't be telling you that if I didn't believe it.
True. Okay, that's fine.
I've been hard on edits on you before, bro. I'm like, yeah.
I know. So I keep those early NFL edits where I had no idea what I was talking about.
Oh man, quite right. But yeah, I mean, like, yeah, the Anka piece on Mbappe was really good. Yasmin's piece on Draymond was amazing.
Okay. So that's
those are my two favorite articles, sports articles I've read this week. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Carl Anka, Mbappe, and Yasmin at Yahoo, right? It was Draymond at.
It was about
Draymond's like player talk, like not treatment, right?
She wrote basically just like if like basically just like if Draymond like he's a smart, incisive like guy, and like, you know, when he speaks, like, you know, and calls out the NBA's double standards, like, people should listen. Also, like, not to plug other outlets, but like I really like Vector Media content, like all of it. Really great. It's like a must subscribe. I mean, Drew Magri's like weekly columns are like, stop what I'm doing. I'll always read those.
Oh yeah, that's like my homepage, and Deadspin was before that. So yeah. Anyway, so much content. Now I'm just creating more content for everyone. So, I'm sorry. Anyways, thank you, Arun. Where can people find you on Twitter and all social media and all that stuff?
So you can find me on Twitter at Arun Things. You can find me on Instagram at the Arun Srinivasan, although because of COVID, I don't post anything interesting anymore. Not to say that anything I posted ever was really interesting on there. But that's my social media. The book I'm working on is scheduled to come out 2 years from now. So I still have lots of work to do.
Do you have a title yet? No, that's a sneak peek.
No, still working away at it, man. That's all I've really got to plug. Follow really the whole team at Yahoo Sports Canada, including Thomas.
Okay.
Bro, this is not a shout out for you. This is me trying to plug all the whole team now, all right? We all trying to get shout outs out here. So and I guess shout out to Big Shiny Tunes, aka the inspiration for Big Shiny Goons, I think.
It was a childhood memory. Turning that on and listening to Nickelback every day.
Nickelback is legit.
Big Shiny Tunes 3 and Get Rich or Die Trying. Perfect pairing.
Amazing.
It's like wine.
If I knew anything about wine, I'd be able to translate that. But yeah, man.
Anyways, thank you. Thank you, everyone, for listening to this very first episode, gentering into this journey. You can find me on Twitter on No Salary Attained. And you can follow the podcast at big_shiny_goons on Twitter as well. And thank you for listening, and check out future episodes, which there will be tons, I'm sure. Thanks, Arun, again for joining me on this first episode.
Yeah, thank you for having me.